Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm kind of honored. I'm on Zoom right now with three people, and I actually didn't double check where they're all coming in from, but they can each tell me. But we're going to be talking about the film I Want to Live on Mars, and I'll just add that that was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year in 2023. It took home the Programmer's Prize for Exceptional Filmmaking because I think it's a really great, it's a feature film, and I just, cursing is encouraged on this podcast, so I'll just share that I enjoyed the shit out of this film. I just really enjoy I Want to Live on Mars. So I will first introduce Maria Somova. And hi, Maria.
How are you doing, Jeff?
Thanks so much for having me. And you want to introduce these two handsome gentlemen who are with us?
Yeah, I have Joe Cyrus sitting next to me. He's an executive producer, and he also composed the original score for the film. I also have Mark Solari here. He's a producer, and he played a supporting character, Mike, in the film.
Excellent, excellent. And as I warned you in advance, I sort of asked for a brief personal history of someone of your creative history. And since we have three people, can't be as long as normal. But Maria, do you want to go first and share what led you into the creative arts?
You know, Jeff, you're not the first person who asked me this question. And I always knew I wanted to be a filmmaker. I really did. And I knew it since I was probably like three, since I could talk. I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. I don't really know why exactly, but that's just something I always knew. It's always been in my head, in my heart. Like, so I always felt like I kind of didn't really have a choice. I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. So that's that.
Well, was it, so what films were you seeing? Like, was it films you saw that inspired you? Like, I want to make what I'm looking at?
I think I wasn't exposed to maybe filmmaking and music that much. Maybe that's why it was such a big deal because, you know, when you're not exposed to something very often, like you hear it or you see it and it just makes such a big impression on you. I think the first film that I remember watching was Thelma and Louise. And I think it was one of those movies that really, like, I don't know, the first thing that I was thinking when I was watching it as a kid, thinking like, women don't behave like that. Especially where I'm from, you don't really get a freedom like this, you know? And I was like, that's very strange, but also so interesting. And being like, you know, as a child, being like, can I do things like this? I don't know. Well, that's very interesting. Just having this whole like thought process in my head as like 6-7 year old kid, you know, and I don't know. It was just the fact that seeing something and it just caused me to think so much and just caused me to ask all these questions and be curious.
Yeah, and I guess I'll ask the obvious question. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ukraine.
Ukraine? My family's Ukrainian.
Oh.
From Odessa.
From Odessa. Yeah, actually, my dad is from Odessa. Yeah.
Super distant cousins. As distant as can be after.
Spent quite a lot of time there. It's beautiful. Beautiful place, yeah.
Yeah, well, my family left in the late 1800s, so. But, okay, so excellent. So you grew up there, and that's where you were first exposed. Interesting that you saw Thelma and Louise around six.
I know. It was, when did it come out? Was it the 90s, I think? 92?
Late 80s, I think.
Late 80s, yeah. Yeah, I was born in 1989, so, yeah, that checks out. Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I was in college when it came out, so that's how I know.
Yeah.
Well, excellent, excellent. And then how old were you when you first, like, so you had the desire to do it. How old were you when you got to act on it a little? Like, did you start writing things? Were you acting out plays with toys or something?
I think I was always writing stuff down. I don't know exactly when it was like, I think I realized that I wanted to kind of write maybe screenplays was when I was about maybe 14. And there was this like very little community theater where I grew up. And I remember just volunteering there. And we had this like writing group and it was all adults. And I was like, can I join? Can I join? And everyone was like, you're a kid. Like, what do you mean? And I was like, what does it matter to you? Like if I sit in one of those, you know, writing sessions or whatnot. And then I did. And then I just kind of started writing my own thing. And then I didn't even think, you know, I didn't know it was good or bad. I didn't think any of it. I just writing, you know, just stream of consciousness. And then one day they asked me to bring it in and I did. And they read it out loud and they were laughing hysterically. And I was sitting there being like, I don't even have a sense of humor. I mean, I don't think I do. You know what I mean? Like, I'll maybe make jokes occasionally, but I don't consider myself like a funny person, you know? And I remember like everyone laughing hysterically and just being like, we want more. I was like, okay, I guess I could write something more. And I guess that's when I knew that maybe I can write something and people find it interesting, you know?
I mean, that's a pretty pivotal time, right? To have your work appreciated for a young person. That's amazing positive feedback, I think.
Yeah, it was definitely very unexpected. I did not see it coming at all.
Excellent, excellent. And when did you get your hands on a camera?
I don't know. I'm like maybe like 16 or 17. And I think it was one of those cameras that use like not like little tapes, probably.
Yeah, like a Hi-8 tape, like a little cassette.
Yeah. Something like that. And I don't even remember, like, it wasn't like, oh, me making a movie. Just more like, just, you know, filming whatever we did with my friends, just walking around the block and being like, oh, this is tree and I'm going to film this tree because I like to see the leaves falling or something, you know, like something random. Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't like me like being like, oh, I'm great at this or I'm good with this camera. Like, do you know what I mean? It never was like I realized that I'm being good at this or whatever. It was just always kind of like, that's what I want to do. And I just really want to get better at it, you know, and just want to keep doing it. And, I mean, I am a big believer that, like, you know, like there are a lot of talented people in the world, but you really have to work hard and you really have to like put hours into whatever you're doing. You really have to like, it takes practice. You know what I mean? It doesn't only take talent. I think it's just a combination of a lot of different things. And also, I'm a very stubborn human. So when I set my mind to something, I have to get it done. So I think that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm still doing this.
That's part of it. That's a big part of it. Cool. All right. Okay, I'll stop pestering you and we can bring in Mark or Joe. Who wants to share next how they got interested in a life associated with the arts?
I can go. So I started out when I was probably like similar to Masha. Is when I was like 6 or 7, I always wrote. I was fascinated by rhymes. I can remember the first rap I wrote. I was probably about 6 years old, and I remember it to this day.
I'll mention, since no one can see you, this is Joe.
Joe Cyrus.
Joe Cyrus.
As said earlier, I composed the soundtrack or helped. I had one other person involved with me, Shine Lab. Shout out to Brian. So I got into that, and I always acted in plays, and I was very involved in art, and I loved writing. And I thought that when I went to school, I would end up being a doctor. So I went to Villanova for college and was in pre-med. And after my first year of school there, I was just utterly bored by my entire curriculum. I just found like I wasn't growing and I was learning things that I could learn on my own without the aid of a teacher or a classroom. So I pivoted and went into English because I was super mesmerized by hip hop and just writing and how you could transpose writing on top of music and kind of have a more profound effect sociologically by transmitting it that way. And I think it was sort of, you know, I've been making hip hop music for about the last 20 years, 25 years. Met pretty much just tons of amazing people through it. So many friends throughout the world. And it's kind of opened up the gates for other artistic endeavors. And I was lucky. I met Maria in Los Angeles because of this. And, you know, she was drawn to my music. I was drawn to her film. And we actually shot a music video while we were in California together, which you can find on YouTube. But then that kind of started our whole coalescence into sort of an artistic unit, the two of us, and we sort of felt like we both complemented each other in ways that the other one didn't. And, you know, we were both very encouraging of one another's art too, which I think, you know, helped both of us, you know, sort of be confident. And yeah, from there we just kind of continued developing and we pushed through and, you know, helped each other through I Want to Live on Mars and, you know, our future endeavors together already starting to come together. So that's kind of where we're at.
Excellent. All right. You've given me more questions for Maria because we never got from Ukraine to Los Angeles, but let's pull Mark in.
Okay.
Mark, hey. Do you want to share your tale?
Okay. Well, I guess from the time I was a little kid, I used to love to draw. And the things I was good at were drawing and math and science. And someone asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, well, I either want to be an artist or a scientist. And they said, well, you can be a scientist and do art as a hobby. And I said, no, I think I want to be an artist. I'll do science as a hobby. And I never, you know, so I was always constantly drawing and I never really did any theater or anything, but I would watch a lot of TV and movies and I would think, okay, when I get older, that's how I'm going to do it. And when I was about 20 years old, someone saw an ad in a paper for people looking to work to build a set for a show. And someone gave it to me and said, you could do this. I said, you know what? I think I'm going to go audition. And it was a musical and they stuck me in the chorus, even though I can't sing. And, you know, I was terrible, but I knew I could be better. And on opening night, we had like a tableau format with a pink light and the curtains open. And they said, oh, yeah, this is what I'm doing. And so since then, it's been nonstop. And except for some time I took off to be with my kids. And but I've been going ever since.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. You all have it's something creative people share, right? Like that moment that you get hooked on it and you know it's for you, even if there's other things that the world tells you are, you know, more valuable or more reliable. It certainly requires a person to be willing. It takes so much courage is, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
Or stupidity.
Well, I do sales as my other job. Some of you see here and know. So you're kind of just like, all right, I heard no before. I'll keep going.
For sure. For sure. All right. Well, all right. So now I know, Maria, you did end up in LA at some point.
I did.
How'd that happen?
I lived in New York for quite a bit and, I think it was time to just, I don't know.
Okay, let me be a little more interviewer-y.
Sure.
So what age did you leave Ukraine?
Well, I left Ukraine several times, but when I moved to New York, I think I was 19, I believe so. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Right, so you land in New York as a almost not teenager anymore, but just barely.
Yeah.
And were you there for school or you just were moving?
I was going to go to like a writing workshops and just kind of try and, I don't know, just try to make it work, try to see what it's going to be like. And I think that just after a while, I realized that I didn't know if I want to stay or not. And then everything went down with, you know, when the war started in my country, I think it was like 2014 when they occupied Crimea.
Yeah, Crimea, yeah.
And I don't know. I wasn't really sure if I wanted to go back at that point. And
you tend to have a lot of humility about this stuff, but obviously at 19, going to New York, that took a lot of courage.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, it's tough to move from New Jersey to New York, let alone Ukraine to New York. I mean, that's a big move.
Yeah, I didn't really see myself living in Ukraine. I think that when I like tell people that I wanted to move to New York or that I wanted to make films, I feel like people would like make fun of me a lot for it. And I don't really blame them because it's not something that just, you know, women do where I'm from. I mean, the times obviously changed, you know, but in like, 2009, 2010, that wasn't something that happens like normal, you know? So I don't really blame, you know, people for not wanting to support me or whatnot. And, I just wanted to pursue my dreams. I mean, that's how you are when you're 19. You're just like, that's what I'm going to do because I'm young and I'm going to, you know, that's what I'm doing now. And you don't really think about what it's going to be like or what it's going to take, what it's going to cost you to do something, you know, you're just doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't think about it too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Just going to follow your dreams.
You know? And pursue them. I mean,
yeah.
There's people who pursue it and there's people who criticize it. Obviously I prefer the pursuers. Well, and did you go, did you come to LA from New York or was there a Ukraine stop in between?
No, I haven't been home since I left.
Oh, got it. I thought you said you'd left Ukraine a couple times.
I did leave Ukraine a couple times when I was a teenager, but not to go to New York.
Gotcha.
I just did some traveling when I was a teenager, and I'm very grateful for opportunity to be able to travel because I think not everyone gets that opportunity. So I'm really happy that it happened to me because it really opened my eyes to what it's like to be somewhere else and live somewhere else, and that everybody is different. And it can be different for me if I wanted it to be different. And I think I really met people that were just kind of more like me, I guess, pursuing their goals and stuff. And that kind of really inspired me to eventually move to New York.
For sure. Yeah. Travel really opens. Well, for many people, travel opens the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So then you came out to LA from New York.
I did, yeah.
And was that film related?
It was. I had a project that I was working on, and I essentially moved to LA, and my friend at that time lived there. So we were kind of working on this project together, and then it just didn't work out.
Right. But it got you here. And then...
I met Joey in LA. So, and, you know, we kind of started talking about this project together when we were still in LA, and, it was also COVID. So it was like 2020 was COVID. And, we just kind of like, you know, living in LA and paying all this money to live in a shoebox, and we couldn't leave because COVID, you know, and you're just kind of stuck in this small room and we can't leave, go anywhere for about a year at that point. That year, six, seven months?
It felt like a year till we had, it was pretty much a year till there was a vaccine and stuff.
Yeah.
I think you're skipping over a really interesting detail though. So when COVID hit, she and I had just started dating, and she actually was on set when the actual first initial breakout of the pandemic happened. And she was in Joshua Tree, completely isolated from the rest of the world. So when she and her crew members got back, they had no idea what was going on. They left and everything was still open. Everything was fine. And when they came back, they were in disbelief. They had no idea everything was shut down. They're kind of like, what the hell is going on? Why is nobody going out? Why can't we do anything? And the rest of us were already kind of locked down for a while. Like, hey, this is what it is now, yeah. You know? And it was, I think in some ways, maybe more shocking for you than anybody else, because you guys were completely removed from it.
We were. Yeah, we were.
You were up there for a week or two?
Yeah, we were there for a while, yeah. And we were pulled. We had to stop filming because we keep hearing those things, you know, about.
I mean, you came. By the time you got home, there was no toilet paper left in the entire city of LA, right?
I don't know, toilet paper. Yeah,
you were probably hopefully Joe stocked up. That's something we're all going to talk about like 30 years from now. Remember when? The most important thing in life was finding toilet paper. It was a weird time.
It was.
It's crazy. We installed bidets in our house, so we didn't have to deal with it as much. But anyway, ordered bidets off of Amazon like second week of COVID.
Yep.
I thought ahead. So you two were, and Joe already shared that you, his musical interest, and that you worked on a music video and stuff together. So I imagine. Did you know Mark? When did you meet Mark?
I know Mark for a long time, I feel like, right, Mark?
Yeah, about 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
So when you were still back in New York, you first met?
Yeah.
Yeah, we worked in theater together, right, Mark?
Yep.
We did a couple things, I think, in theater, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, found the same script, but bigger.
Yeah. That's right. The same script, but it was a shorter version and then it was a longer version. That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I was always...
A film?
Theater. No, it was
theater. Theater, right. So stay. So you
were... We were going to do the... Yeah, we cast everything, touch on...
I mean, I've always been very like fond of Mark and his work. And when I wrote the script, Mark was the first person that got to read it. And he was the first person that I cast for the role of Mike, and he did an amazing job. Thank you. Thanks again, Mark, for being a part of this project.
Thank you.
So what's interesting is you never shared your interest in live theater.
Well, I did say that I started kind of in theater. That's where I read my first work.
Right.
I did theater for a while. I was like stage managing. I was more like, you know, technical stuff like lighting, sound. Get to do some set design even for theater at some point. I remember building a porch for a play years ago. I've done quite a bit of theater, but I think just filmmaking was always something that was just kind of comes first, you know what I mean? Like that's something I was really wanted to pursue.
And Mark, working with Maria, I'm going to put words in your mouth, but I assume she made a quite an impression.
She was our stage manager, producer, and photographer, and I think she did the dishes as well. And I always remember like. What I really remember is her photography was so great. I have quite a few pictures that Maria took that they're like golden of when we were working on the production. And I also knew she had a strong artistic bent more than commercial, which is what always appealed to me and why you've never heard of me before. So...
Excellent, excellent. So did you stay in touch over the years or when you were, well, I guess I should ask when you left when the two of you left Los Angeles and ended up back east again?
Yeah, I think we didn't per se stay in touch properly, if that makes sense. But I think we did talk here and there. I think when I moved back east, it was just something that I was, you know, I was writing this story and I just knew that I have to send it to Mark. You know, it just kind of clicked, you know.
Well, that's what creative communities are like, right? You don't have to stay in touch, but if you have a positive working relationship with someone and you respect each other, you can let 3 years go by, but then you say, hey, I want you to look at something, and artistic people support each other most of the time.
It's also, you know, I want to talk to a person when I have something for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have this project, I want you to do it. Like, do you know what I mean? So just sometimes just like I'm holding out because I have something that I working on and then I'm going to show it when I'm ready, you know?
So you reached out specifically because like you'd come up with the idea for I Want to Live on Mars?
Yeah, I think I had originally it was just kind of two female characters talking, which was just Breezy and Pickles. And then I came up with Mark's character. Actually, interesting enough, I don't know if I told, I feel like I did tell this story to Mark, but I'm not sure. So I used to go to a coffee shop in West Hollywood where I lived in LA, and I would sit down and write. And there was this man who would like come to a coffee shop a lot, and he would just kind of sit in a corner and talk to himself. And I was curious one day, and as weird as it sounds, I followed him. And I realized that he doesn't have a home. And, you know, next time I saw him at the coffee shop, I bought him food, I bought him coffee, and we kind of got talking to each other. And he told me that he used to like play for Rolling Stones. Like, he told me like he, you know, used to be like done all these things as a musician. And then he would kind of go back and forth to just kind of like going back to not being present, if that makes sense. Like, we'd have a conversation, I'd see like something switch, and he would just be kind of just gone and just onto his own thing. So, and I wasn't really sure to believe it or not, you know, like he's telling me this like stories. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, you know, and then we just kind of keep seeing each other and just keep buying him breakfast, keep buying him coffee. And then actually one night I was walking down Sunset Boulevard and I saw him play guitar and sing, and he was absolutely amazing. And I was like, oh my God. And that's kind of how Mike's character came about.
Oh, so that's who you wrote it. That's who inspired the writing of it.
Yep.
And I guess we're sort of in Mars territory now, right? So I Want to Live in Mars is just a very original indie feature, focused on two young women, but they're in exurban Pennsylvania, like out in the middle of nowhere in a town that's essentially a dead town. How many people live there at this point? Less than 50?
Seven.
That's right. So when you're creating the characters who live there, one of them was inspired by that gentleman?
Yes. Yep. And I just kind of took his personality and I kind of let Mark shape him a little bit more, add his own things to it, his own ideas, and then we just put him in Centralia.
Right. So you wrote out the screenplay and sent it to Mark with and you said, this is your character?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Mark, he saw the movie, Jeff. He grew the hair, he grew the beard, he was in full character, like, the whole time, you know, like I really appreciate it. And I always like, what really frustrates me a lot of the time as a filmmaker, when I feel like we're on set and there's never enough time. You always like on time crunch. And I really wish we had more time to do more stuff, you know, but we didn't. But But yeah, I'm just so grateful for Mark and everything he's done for the project, really.
Yeah. And Mark, what how did you feel when you first read the script?
The first version of the script I got was just like pretty much just scenes, and there was no dialogue, and there was just like some action, and I was like, okay, all right, now I know Maria's arty, so I asked her what her influences were for this movie, so I could have a clue. And then she did tell me about she knew that the guy was someone she actually knew. And I think what did you tell me your influence? Ghost World
and Gummo, I think. Was it Gummo?
Gummo was definitely, and I was like, yeah, that, which I could never find the whole movie, but
yeah.
And there was one other too, but
I think it was Winter's Bone. Mm. I think it was Ghost World.
Oh, Napoleon Dynamite.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a good one. Yeah.
And so, and I said, well, that works for me. So,
I mean, you just named a bunch of beloved, mostly super independent films.
Yeah.
And I imagine Joe is seeing scripts along the way or ideas. Are you always bouncing things off each other?
Yeah, we actually, you know, Maria wrote the film, but a lot of the film was also based on dialogue the two of us had. She likes to record audio a lot of times. So there, you know, we had a lot of intimate moments together, deep conversations, things like that, you know, I wasn't necessarily aware I was being recorded while it was happening, but it would end up making in the film. A lot of the like funnier, like story parts are kind of inspired, like the one with the guy telling the story about his friend puking all over the carpet and all that stuff. That actually happened. That was my best friend in high school. And I felt like I got a little revenge on him because now it's immortalized in a movie. So now he can't forget that he did that. So, but you know, he's my beloved friend. And you know, I told him before the movie came out, I was like, hey, you remember when he puked all that purple birthday cake all over my carpet? It's in the movie now. So you're never going to live it down.
That's actually, by the way, everyone loves a puke story, but
yeah,
pretty interesting. This process of kind of secretly recording conversations, and then obviously you listen back to them or you remember things that you want to use, but then you do have the artifact of the recording to go back and really just nail it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's kind of how we work. I did that because I feel like a lot of the times when I watch the movie, dialogue doesn't feel natural. It's like either like that's not how people talk, or it's like that. It's like it's too
quippy.
Like it's too like intelligent. It feels like everyone sounds the same kind of, or it's like, oh, it's the same writer writing everybody's dialogue. So we kind of try to work around that and just wanted it to sound to like as natural as possible.
I appreciate that a lot. I mean, I'm one of those. Obviously, I'm a fan of indie film, so most Hollywood stuff, in general, the dialogue is just too perfect. Like, a person would never think to say just the right thing in that moment, you know, the whatever. I always make fun of the Tom Cruise movie, right? The Jerry Maguire thing, like, I'm going to give the perfect speech right now, and you're going to have the perfect response. And it's like, nah, that's, I don't know, it doesn't. I know it's beloved, but it doesn't work for me. So, well, we did cover, what else should we, you want to, so I want to live on Mars besides these two gentlemen. I mean, one of the things I really appreciate about the film is the number of names you gave credit as producer. In theory, was it just anyone who helped you get it made? You said, I'm going to make you a producer?
We did a Kickstarter campaign, and a lot of, I mean, honestly, like a lot of the folks just, I mean, when we started the Kickstarter campaign, I did not expect to raise that, the money that we raised to do this movie. I remember just waking up every day and just keep refreshing the page and just, cause just being so stressed, you know, and, a lot of people responded to our fundraiser in a very positive way. And, so many people supported us through it all. And they just, I don't know, it just felt fair, you know, to just thank everybody. Cause it really is like a teamwork, you know, it's like so many people helped to bring this project to life, you know?
And was, do you think it was because the way you presented the Kickstarter, was there, or was it the originalness of the concept?
I think it's, I don't, you know, it's really,
or maybe
funny.
Joe Remarque has a little insight to what was a piece. So, cause obviously really drew people in.
I think that when we started the Kickstarter campaign, I told him, I was like, you're going to raise the most money for this movie just because he has the personality and he just knows how to talk to people and he has so many friends everywhere, you know, and I was right for sure.
Well, I think it's funny because she said, I'm going to make you executive producer on this film. I think you're going to raise more money than anybody else. And I said, why the hell are you doing that? I don't want anything to do with that. And she said, no. Like, and with me being in hip hop for 20 years up to this point too, like I have a lot of connections in that industry. But I didn't know how well I would be able to leverage that over into film. And, you know, hip hop artists are notoriously kind of like under supportive of one another. So I didn't necessarily – I kind of pushed back on that idea when she presented it. And I was like, I don't think that's going to happen. And then sure enough, she was totally right. So then I felt a lot less bad about it.
I did not – I mean, when I launched the Kickstarter, I did not know how people were going to respond to it. I did not know how much money we're going to raise. And I think that I am genuinely oblivious to – because I had so many people like message me on the side and be like, hey, we're like really excited for you. Like you really, you know, we've been waiting for you to make something forever. Like, you know, and people like, I'll get messages on like my Facebook. People would post on my Facebook wall and be like, hey, like I worked with Maria before. Like she's a badass. And like say things like that where I'm like so oblivious to this stuff because I'm like, I never think that I'm good enough or I'm doing good enough job. And in the back of my mind, I always think that I'm like terrible at this, terrible at that. I'm failing. I'm failing everybody. You know what I mean? And so it's kind of a miracle to just, you know, that this movie is here and we're here doing this with you. It's kind of, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
I totally understand. I mean,
I was going to say, I don't let those thoughts go unchecked. Because, like, reality testing is important. And, like, you know, everybody's going to have a different personality towards themselves as well as other people. And, like, you know, being partners and being together, I understand that. And I think, like, you know, it's important to reality test to be like, are you terrible at this? Because we already have this music video that's amazing. I can already see the cinematography here. I can already see the scope of this project when it started as, like, this idea you kept running your head against the wall in LA with, and now, you know, it's a year later and it's almost at fruition. And then, you know, it's, we're on set and it's kind of like, you have to reality test that. Like, obviously your opinion of how terrible you are at these things wasn't really the truth. Cause you could see that by the result.
For sure. For sure. And the reaction. Yeah. When I assume did I ever ask you how you feel about it? Or do I just tell you how much I like it?
About the movie?
Yeah. Are you one of those creators who can appreciate the work or do you watch it? And
you know, I'll tell you this. We just received our first review about the film. And I was really nervous, you know, because I was like, oh, you know, I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know what they're going to write, what they're going to think, if they're going to even understand the movie. And one thing that they said that the female characters were developed very well, and then the male characters might have, you know, needed maybe a little bit more development. And then we were talking about this. I was talking about, you know, the review with Joey, and I was like, you know, I think they're right. I was like, maybe the male characters in the film could have been developed a little bit more. And Joe was like, well, listen, you did develop them. We just didn't have time to shoot it. Because it's, remember, Mark, we had a scene when you were, well, looking at the picture of your family.
Yeah.
And maybe like you lost the wife and a kid and that did not make into the film. Then we had a scene where you were performing actually on, you know, in like a dive bar or something, and you just kind of having a block and you couldn't do it. So there's a lot of things that I actually did write in the script and unfortunately didn't have time to
film them. I was supposed to be a serial killer.
He was supposed to be a serial killer in the movie too. He was supposed to have a cameo, and that didn't happen either. So it's, as I said, it can be very frustrating to, you know, to just not have enough time to do what you were set out to do, what you wanted to do sometimes. And I guess my biggest regret is like, if we had more time to get certain things done, I wish we really did. And I think that, yeah, it also comes from like organizational part. It's like when you make an independent film, you have to wear so many hats, and you know, I'm not great at that, and I'm not great at multitasking. So there are certain things that are like could have been done better, you know, organization wise. And I wish they were done better, but it didn't happen. So, you know, that's my regrets.
But, I'm not even sure I asked for regrets. I just wondered if you but I'm going to jump in and say that review,
yeah,
I would quarrel with. Because nearly every film ever made, the main characters are fleshed out the most and the supporting characters aren't. And if someone said the women are really full-fledged characters and the men aren't, well, this is a film about two women. And I don't know. Was that a male reviewer? Because, I mean, seriously, how many films have we all seen where there's a bunch of really important dudes and then the women are just standing on screen and barely get a personality, you know, and like their dialogue is like nothing. Like your film certainly shows your male characters tons of respect and they are fairly fleshed out and they are unique people.
Yeah.
But that comment kind of pisses off my inner feminist whatever soapbox problem, because I mean, fucking hell, fuck them. Sorry, I'm one of those people who thought there was too much Ken in that dumb Barbie movie. But anyway, like, why did we even need any Ken songs? But anyway, so there you go. It's a film. And that's what's refreshing about it, too. And that's what's great about indie film. I mean, interestingly, like Thelma and Louise, which you named, one of the few films ever made by Hollywood where all the supporting, the two main leads are women.
Yeah. What an ending.
Have they done it since? Like, maybe a few times. But it's rare. It's rare to have a film that really lets, and a friendship between two women. Mm-hmm. Is the highlight of the film.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Masha also glanced over a little bit of serendipity when she moved to New York. You want to tell the story?
Serendipity?
When she moved to New York, she was out walking and she got tangled by somebody walking their dog. So she untangled this dog around her leg.
Oh. Oh my God, no.
This is after.
I'm not telling that story.
I'm telling it.
No, we're not. No.
Okay.
No, we're not. I'm not.
Oh, now you gotta.
The director has spoken.
Yep. Hey,
but Fair enough. I said let's not share stuff you might want me to cut out. So fair
There's
enough.
No reason to cut this story. She's just shy.
But most great art is filled with is shaped by necessity and serendipity.
Yep.
Yeah.
She got her Thelma and Louise.
And it sounds like a really positive experience for those. I mean, I guess Mark, you want to talk about what the set was like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was
in spite of the town being toxic.
I'll be good, Maria. but it was, you know, I brought, you know, when I went to set, like, we all stayed in a hunter's cabin way up in the Pennsylvania mountains. And, you know, I came in with a lot of stuff like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. But then just being in that environment really kind of changed a lot of things I thought about. So the area was gorgeous. It was, you know, really rural. And but the cabins we stayed in, they were hunter cabins and they were very basic. And I remember picking up a lot of mouse carcasses around the floor, first one. And then that was Breezy's house. And then the one that was Pickle's house, that was Hunter's cabin. And in every corner, there was ammunition. And I am not a gun person. And, you know, I appreciate hunters, but it was really strange to me. And it was, their choice in artwork was a little iffy. But that helped shape me because, you know, it was like, okay, we're really in the place. So, you know, it helped influence Mike's character, you know.
For sure. And I mean, the settings of this film are such a huge part of it.
For sure.
I mean, I believe you shared with me once that most of it was found, right? You didn't really do a lot of set dressing.
No, it was just there. The Yellow Dog Village where we filmed some of the film, it's been abandoned since 2010, and it's just blocks and blocks of like abandoned houses. And there's this man, his name is Joe. He bought this town and he preserved it in its originality. So when people left, they left some things behind. So there's still records and pianos, old television, old toys, old phones. It's all still there. And he preserved it as such. And he let us film there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's just an amazing time capsule. Truly, actually, we had another film in the festival last November that was also quite... it was shot at an abandoned army base. Mm. It had been a barracks like 40 years ago, and it's just sitting there like an hour outside of Chicago or something. And man, the look of a building that hasn't had humans in it for a decade plus, mm-hmm. there's very few things that cinematic.
Yeah.
So excellent choice. Well, yeah. And did this experience, are you gearing up for another film?
Yeah, we wrote a feature together. It is called Plastic Island. And I don't really know yet when we're going to go in production. But we're still kind of in revisions right now. But I'm definitely excited about the script itself. I think that we've done a very good job. Developing characters and the story. Do you want to talk about it a little bit if you want?
Yeah, I'll talk about it a little more. Like, we've been writing this for a while now. So we went through, you know, kind of a round of submissions and got a lot of feedback, took our time, made sure we really listened to that feedback and sort of checked in with each other, what we agreed with, what we didn't, what we really saw as valid points that we could kind of hit the pen harder on. And I feel really great where it's at right now. I think it's really at a point where the story is very strong. And we're probably not too far away from being able to start moving forward with production. So sometime in the near future, will be making this happen?
Basically, the premise is it's about a single mom, and she had a kid when she was very young. She had a kid at 15, and it's basically just kind of her life story and her trying to figure out who she is in the, you know, who she is and her place in the world and just how to be a good mom to her kid.
And she's still really young.
Yeah. And also her family is not really supportive of her. And so she kind of have to also, you know, deal with a lot of rejection and not a good upbringing. And yeah, just like trying to survive and just be a good mother to her child. So that's really what the premise is about the motherhood.
I think this film is very funny, though. So I know it's like the way you just described it is so serious.
It's very sad, but also very, very funny.
Yeah.
So there is both sides of that. It's a good combination of both, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's life, right?
Yeah.
We have to laugh through our struggles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think we've reached the point where maybe I'll ask, do you want all three of you? Like, are you, you want to mention social media or web pages or anything?
Sure. I mean,
and did you write it? Wait, did you write a part for Mark in the next one?
I did, actually.
Cool. I'm ready.
Did he just find out for the first time now being recorded?
Yeah, he did. I haven't been,
as I said, it's like when I have something, I'll show it. It's not quite ready yet, so that's why I've been holding out. But yeah, there's a part for Mark.
Excellent. Well, I am a Mark Solari fan for I Want to Live on Mars, and for the fact that he has a Beatles Yellow Submarine coffee cup, because I got Beatles Yellow Submarine action figures on the shelf over here. So what can I say? Someone with a Beatles Yellow Submarine coffee cup's got to be an awesome person.
Oh yeah,
I saw Mark's version of that cup.
I saw Mark's Rolling Stone shirt, so I had to get off camera real quick and put my Ice Cube shirt on.
I had a hoodie
on over it. So
was it a competing musical influence?
No, I appreciate that. So I was like, okay, if this is the vibe we're going with, I'll take the hoodie off because I knew I had that on underneath.
Excellent. Well, hey, music is central to film. So
yep.
Bravo on the music and I Want to Live on Mars. So
yeah, Joe did an excellent job. So
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, so the is there a website or social media that people should follow?
We should make a clickable link. We have, you can Google I Want to Live on Mars. There's a lot of things will pop up. We're on IMDb. We have a website, iwantolivonmars.com. There's also Facebook page, Twitter page. If you want to follow our company page, we call Aura Fire Productions. We also have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube channel.
Yep.
You know, that's one of the wonderful things about, by the way, I will now share a film festival programmer's secret, which is, I think it's close to 80% of the time, if the title's great, the film is great. You know what I mean? Because if the creative people behind the film come up with just a very original, unique title that works, it just, I think, says something about the completeness of the concept. And so it's pretty cool that you have such a unique title that you can have iwantolivonmars.com and all this stuff. Like, you know, the people who wrote a short, I'm going to get myself in trouble, but like, I see a lot of shorts with the same titles as a festival programmer. Like everybody just, it stopped, I think, this last year, but for 3 to 5 years, like we got 10 ride shares per festival submitted. Like everyone was writing a film about ride sharing, you know, it's like, I was like, come on, you got to have a different title. I mean, we can't have three ride. I think we actually did have two ride shares in one festival because they were both good. And they were both embarrassed that they had the same title at that point. Anyway, I'll get off my movie title soapbox and just give you one more golf clap for your title.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll wrap us up. I'll do my closing spiel, which is thank you everyone for listening. This is the Discover Indie Film Podcast, where we just talk to some of the great filmmakers on the festival circuit. If you want to learn more about the podcast, and there's actually a TV series that was born out of it, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. On social media, it's always at DIFWINS. And I mentioned the TV series. The TV series is a anthology of short films that's on Amazon Prime Video. So if you go to Amazon Prime Video and type into search Discover Indie Film, somewhere along the line it auto completes, and right now there's 7 seasons of all short films. The features, if that happened because I started this podcast, and everyone with a feature kind of ended up on streaming and everyone with a short did not, and I thought, oh, maybe we can fix that. So kind of very proud of it. We used to be included with Prime. Now Amazon makes us charge people $7.99 a season or 99 cents an episode. But I will say to anyone still listening to me go on and on about this that, you know, like 26 great short films for $8, you know, it's not the biggest ask in the world for people who made films pretty much out of their own pocket. So anyway, that's Discover Indie Film. And please like and subscribe to the podcast if you happen to be doing that. And I Want to Live on Mars was an official selection and award winner at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that every November. If you want to learn more, it's the website's ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Their sister festival that we hold every June is Film Invasion Los Angeles, and you can learn about that at FilmInvasionLA.com and at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And the last thing I got to mention is called TV High. If you go to WatchTVHigh.com, that is a smart TV app that I was crazy enough to start, that is wonderful, high quality, great films and comedy specials and some even some series, and they're all great. And it's called TV High because if you can enjoy cannabis responsibly, everything on TV High might be even a little better if you're stoned. So it's WatchTVHigh.com, and it's on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV, iPhone and iPad, and Android Mobile. So I'm not the world's biggest stoner, but I do appreciate the mixture of cinema and cannabis. I think they actually go together really well. And I've never seen I Want to Live on Mars after an edible, but I think I'd really like it. I might even like it more. Joe agrees. I might be like, sequel. But anyway, I want to know what happens. Actually, I Want to Live on Mars kind of does leave room for the next chapter in their lives. But
true
enough. But it's also wonderful just to end it that way. All right, and talking about editing, wow, what a nice segue. Time to end this podcast. And Maria, Joe, Mark, thank you all so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.